The fact that it's Wednesday means only one thing. It is time for our Jam Masters segment. And we have our Jam Master in studio. But just to remind you a little bit of the kind of conversations we've been bringing your way in our continued commitment to bring you dope people who are experts and masters of their trade. Have a listen to who we hosted last week.
Kuhasol.com.
Yes.
Oh, that's you.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey. Yeah, so now, another quick question. We tried to get you some time back. It was last week, I think. Mm. And the phone was ringing like it was ringing abroad somewhere. Mm. Where were you?
Hey, I was at Harvard University for the Africa Business Conference. I was a panelist speaking on the future of education in Africa.
How does Martin Kariuki become a Harvard panelist? Since there's something else you've missed out on, who are you?
I'm also a Daystar dropout. Uh-huh. Second year. Shout out to Daystar. Mtu aza tumasalamu kwa hiyo yenyu. I went to Daystar. I was studying community development. I dropped out second year. And so it's quite a privilege for somebody who just did university 2 years to be speaking at such a big panel at Harvard. It was quite inspiring for me. Yes.
When you're asked who are you next time, please.
I start with that. I'm the Daystar dropout who spoke at Harvard about X period weeks ago.
Drop,
and that's me.
The mic. That's right. That was Sam Gishoro. So many companies that you have heard about that he is associated with. The latest one is, of course, Kidato School. But today, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll, please. We have in studio Miriam Mutebi, Dr. Miriam Mutebi. Hi, Miriam.
Hi, how are you? Happy to be here.
So glad that we could have you over. I know there are patients all over this country going, where is Dr. Tari? She's on the radio with Kinajun. Now, listen, greetings from Martin Kariuki. And on his behalf, I must ask you the first question the way he normally asks it. Are you ready?
Sure.
Who are you?
Who am I? That is the question.
Who are you? Who is Miriam?
I think I like to think of myself as a hope monger or a hope mongerer, for want of a better word.
I
like to say I'm in the hope business, and I'm hoping, no pun intended, that, you know, all my actions and interactions with people ultimately translate into hope. And I will sort of, you know, talk a little about that because I like to say I'm a breast cancer surgeon by day and a clinical health systems researcher by night. Mm-hmm. But I think why it's important for hope is, especially in our communities, for the longest time, the narrative has been that cancer equals death.
Mm.
And we're saying that, listen, if caught early, treated appropriately, cancers have an excellent prognosis. So it's really infusing the hope and optimism, I would say, into all aspects of cancer care.
All right. That is a very hope mongera. I like that. Because people just say, rumor mongera. It's like a phrase.
Mongeras kind of get a bad rep.
But
I'm like, listen, we want this to permeate. We want that mushane of hope to, you know.
She has reclaimed the mongeration. I love it. Okay, hope mongera. I understand that you are the first female breast surgeon in Kenya. Is that accurate?
Yes, but I'm happy to announce that I'm certainly not the last.
Yes!
Yes, there have been lots of, I think there's been quite a number of clinicians who've gone into breast surgery. There's quite a big drive towards incorporating more surgical oncologists. So
yes.
Very enthusiastic and pleased that there's
you're
definitely a long train. Exactly.
So
exactly.
You are a pioneer, a trailblazer in this particular profession. Why do you think there's been so few? Why do you think it took you to start it off? Is it an area that we are afraid of? Is it something that we don't have the skill set to do? What took so long?
I think it's also been pretty much about representation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the longest time, surgery, just as a profession, was traditionally male-dominated. And so sometimes I think looking at the experience of people would actually either enroll and then drop out.
Mm.
And so I think it was always been the fact that people thought that we couldn't do it. And now that there's more and more people, which is great, there's
yes.
more visibility, there's definitely more enrollment and and engagement in that. And I think that's really important because if we look at the critical role of women in healthcare, we know that women form the bulk of our workforce. I would say in sub-Saharan Africa, at least 70%.
Yeah. So you mean like the whole ecosystem?
Exactly,
so nurses,
exactly,
doctors
exactly,
as well,
exactly,
to support
exactly.
staff, all of that.
Precisely, precisely. But then if you look at then the demographic that then sort of trickles down to surgery, which we see across sub-Saharan Africa, if you look at the total workforce, is about maybe anywhere between 1-5%. But if we sort of, you know, throw that on the back of some interesting numbers where we know that 9 out of 10 people, mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, have no access to safe, timely surgery, then we're like, how do we, you know, creatively expand the workforce? And that, you know, we're having 50%, I mean, we potentially can increase that by 50% just by enrolling more women.
Yeah.
But it's not just, you know, enrolling women for women, because women have a unique role in the health ecosystem in sub-Saharan Africa, especially in overcoming some of the barriers to care that patients frequently get. Like a shosho comes in, she sees somebody who's her buka's age, she doesn't want to talk about, oh, I'm having, you know, vaginal bleeding, which could be a sign of, you know, gynecological cancer, or they don't necessarily want their breasts examined. So women have a unique role in trying to expand both the workforce, but also really, you know, enhancing the quality of care that women are getting in our country and region.
So interesting. I think a lot of us don't even think about it like that, you know, especially if we're the ones who are feeling sick. We just want treatment. But then the thing that can, what you're calling a barrier to treatment, you walk in and you feel, I'm not comfortable. And then that affects even how you share what your symptoms
or
are, what you're
you
feeling.
Share. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Capital FM. You're listening to The Jam on 98.4 Capital FM. It's Jam Masters Wednesday, and we have in studio Dr. Miriam Mutebi, first female breast surgeon in Kenya, telling us so much about representation, about the medical profession, things that we probably have never even thought about, but so, so, so relatable. So we're so honored to have you in studio. Karibu sana once again.
Thank you.
And of course, we're talking to all of you who are KCB bank holders, account holders. And we have a simple question for you, because the generosity, given that we have a long weekend, requires that we give you something, courtesy of our good friends at KCB. We do have 2,000 shillings for you, which will be put into your KCB bank account. But if you want to win it and be able to do some things with that money this weekend, this long weekend, this long, long, long weekend, this is all you need to do to stand a chance to win 2,000 shillings courtesy of KCB. Please tell us, how can you pay your shopping bill using the KCB iBank app? As simple as that. You've gone to the supermarket, you've gone to the chemist, you've gone to whatever it is. How can you pay for your shopping bills? Let us know at the Jam 984. Please tag at Jungashui, at Paloti76, and of course at KCB Group. We'd like you to use the hashtags KCB iBank and hashtag Drive Out. Those are the things we're looking for. You can use our WhatsApp line as well, 0701-984-984. We're looking forward to your answers. Dr. Miriam Mutebi.
Miriam's fine.
Just Miriam. You know,
you say, Dr. Miriam, and you're there sitting up, you're like,
Are you trying to tell me we're not that generation where people must know through the summer?
Absolutely not. It doesn't define you.
Very true. Hence the reason why we know you as the hope mongerer, but this is something that you do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So first of all, I think it's important to talk about not just the profession in terms of the work that you do in terms of treating your patients, but the I want to call it like policy work, because for me, when anybody is passionate enough about the work that they do, the ecosystem within which they work, then they do a little bit more, they take it a step further. When you first said hello to us, we were talking about, you know, yesterday for me was World Intellectual Property Day, and so that's massive in my field of practice. So any conversations around anything to do with IP, June was somewhere in that midst.
Yeah.
And I see that you are also doing similar things. Recently, I think at the end of last year, you were appointed to the African Organization for Research and Training in Cancer, AORTIC, which is a Pan-African organization, and you are the president-elect. And really what it is supposed to be doing is building capacity. And I think that is taking your profession to that next level. What caused you to sort of, did you identify gaps and say, how can I be part of this conversation?
Yeah, I think sort of circling back to the patient journey, you sort of look at what are the three major sort of speed bumps that our patients encounter in order to access care. Mm. And you have the like the sort of three big ones, and you look at the first major barrier that most of us are aware of is the financial barriers, the fact that patients are having to pay out of pocket in order for them to access care. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've tried to, I would say, at least from a local perspective, we've tried to improve on that in terms of having a national hospital insurance fund that covers, you know, some of the costs of care. But it's great, but it's still not perfect in the sense that we're still having patients having to pay out of pocket for quite a number of things. And so that's the major sort of big barrier. And then you look at the second barrier, and we see that health systems themselves actually act as barriers to care, where sometimes you have patients coming in with advanced disease or getting and we're saying, why have you been this late? But you actually go back and you follow the trail and you find out that this patient has actually been ping-ponging through the health system because maybe somebody didn't give them the correct diagnosis, or they're given, they're falsely reassured, or they're sent home with, you know, antibiotics, kibao, and, you know, they're not necessarily getting
doing any work that it needs to do.
Yeah, and you're getting treatment, but nobody's saying, listen, I'm using, you know, this is the fourth, you know, course of antibiotics. Why isn't this resolving? Can we maybe resolve, can we maybe transfer you to somebody who knows better? And so even when the patient engages with a system, they still get those barriers. And then now the one of the things that we don't talk about often enough is the social-cultural barriers that exist to care, especially because there's lots of myths, lots of misconceptions around cancers and their spread. Yeah. But more importantly, I think one of the major things, June, is that in many parts of sub-Saharan Africa, in many parts of Kenya as well, women are not the primary determinants of their health-seeking behavior. So you can't really have a conversation around access to health without talking about empowerment of populations. And empowerment is not just you know, financial access. It's, you know, the literacy you have, you know, is have we managed to educate people enough such that they're able to recognize, you know, or learn about common signs and symptoms of cancer? Do they have the financial stability in order for them to access care? Do they have agency over their bodies in order for them to influence their health seeking behavior? So it's all those different nuances. And if we sort of take the 30,000 feet view of those, we do realize that some of these we can sort of solve at a local level and a community level, but then you do need to take it to the policy level and say, what systems and things are we putting in place to ensure that all these different parameters of care percolate down to the populations that need them?
And I, even as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, it should be as simple as, I don't feel well, I'm going to the hospital, and I know I should be reassured that I'll get the kind of treatment that I need. I'll get the diagnosis that I need. And then I'll get the... Actually, that's the first one, right? It's I can walk in, trust that whoever I meet will be able to care for me.
Absolutely.
With dignity and all of those things that we take for granted.
Exactly.
Be able to do a correct diagnosis and then be able to determine what the course of treatment is.
Absolutely. And you're really touching on things that, as you said, things we take for granted, like respectful care. And the assumption that if I'm going to go to a health system, there's a certain level of trust that if I go in, I expect to get the correct diagnosis, the correct treatments. I expect my... my healthcare provider not to see me as patient X,
or money,
to see,
or
exactly,
or
exactly,
or cash coming in,
exactly.
Cash
my
cow.
next down payment.
Yes.
It's looking at is the physician really seeing me? Because it's not about me being. And we always say, as Africans, we always attach stories. So, and I think it's actually not necessarily an African; it's more of a human condition. We attach stories to our processes of disease and our understanding of that. And so, unless you understand what are the stories that are going on around this disease process? Like, for instance, we always say telling a woman in sub-Saharan Africa that you have a cancer diagnosis is not just you have cancer. It's you could lose your kids.
Yes.
You could lose your source of livelihood.
That's the story around.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So even when I'm coming in with a lump, it's not that I have a breast lump. It's what's going to happen to my kids, what's going to happen to my family. And unless we sort of become the kind of healthcare providers who have that nuanced discussion around, it's not just enough to tell you, listen, you're fine. You don't have a lump or you don't have a cancer. It's what are the different parameters? What's going on under the, it's that iceberg phenomenon. Yeah. What is the 90% that's going on?
Peak.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And that's kind of the vibe we sort of strive for at our breast clinic, because we know it's not just about the diagnosis. It's about managing you holistically. And when you find that, when people, both men and women, have an opportunity to share, you'd be amazed at the stuff that comes out. Sometimes
it's
you
so different.
Want to, I know. You're like, oh.
I feel like there's a whole TV series about the story.
Absolutely.
Well, more when we come back. Capital FM. We are getting the final words of wisdom from our Jam Master in studio today, Miriam Mutebi. What would you tell your 20-year-old self?
That's a good question. Dear Miriam.
Do you remember her?
Oh, yes. She was naive and thinking she was going to conquer the world. I think I would tell her to enjoy the journey.
Yes.
Because sometimes we get obsessed with, you know, really just, you know, what is the next thing? Mm. What is the next level? And then, you know, when we were in training, one of my professors used to say, enjoy your residency. And we're looking at him like, we are sleeping like, I think, 3 hours in a day. Like, how are we supposed to enjoy this? But then you realize, like, the camaraderie and the connections and the friendships that you've built are actually... So I would just say taking time to really enjoy and appreciate the moment is things that I would tell myself. Mm. And then I would sort of look back and say, yes, girl, there is no substitute for hard work.
Yes.
It always continues. So keep at it. You're doing well. It doesn't matter. It might
like
look
a pat on your back.
Exactly.
Right?
It might look like, because at that time you're thinking, where is all this going? What's happening and stuff? But I think just consistency. Be consistent in what you want to do and what you want to achieve. And again, one of the things I would probably tell, the last thing I would say is keep your vision, because lots of people will try and
keep your vision.
Exactly. There's lots of people who will try and talk you out of stuff, like, can this really happen and stuff. But they unfortunately do not have your vision. You are the one who has your vision. Yeah. You're the one who knows where you want to go.
Yeah.
And so sometimes advice can be, you know, helpful and well-meaning, but they really don't know what is in your heart and what you're trying to express. So I would say probably stay true to yourself, keep hold of your vision, and, you know, just keep at it.
I love it. Like, protect and shield and guard and keep hold of your vision.
Exactly.
I love it. Miriam, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, we'll probably have to bring you in for another session because it is 5 o'clock.
Always
and we
happy
need to.
Go.
Fun, fashion, art. You know, I follow you, the African creativity, diversity. Even today, you'll see the pictures, guys. I'm like, she's a doctor. Eh? These are the kind of doctors I want to treat me, because they're, you know how you go to a salon and the salon has bad nails, or the person doing your hair or your nails has bad nails, bad hair. I kind of feel like the way we present ourselves is extremely important. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we have you next time. But I want to say thank you for coming to the Jam.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been amazing.